Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined, as always, by mysterious Max Montana. And we are here at Max's Gym, the very creatively named Max's Gym in Oakland, California. That's good.
There we go.
That's pretty damn good. Today's episode is brought to you by Hyphy and Hypertrophy. It's a lifestyle. And that just came to me when he said Mac Dre.
That's brilliant. So, brilliant.
That's probably my greatest gift in all of life. Is making up fake lifestyle brands, or real lifestyle brands, who knows. Today, we just finished up a great little snatch workshop here, and now have this group, and we're gonna be talking about improving bar trajectory, so making sure you're putting the bar in the right place over your head, because even if you can pull it high, and even if you're really fast, if it's not in the right spot, it's not gonna matter. And Max knows a lot about this, because I've heard him described as the fastest lifter people had ever seen, plus front squat 270, but was a shit weightlifter by
Very
his
true.
Own admission. So he's had to learn about a lot about bar trajectory since then. So our good friend Jeremy David Martin, this Canadian dreamboat over here, is going to be our demonstrator, and we'll let Max and Jerry.
Yeah, you got the stick.
Yeah, take it away from here, talking bar trajectory. Yeah.
All right, so the how many of you guys have read the book I wrote? Okay, three of you.
How many of you knew that Max had a book? Okay, that's a little
bit
better.
That's not good. Yeah, I'm waiting to get a pirate copy. So we kind of break down the components of lifting technique so that it's a universal things, right? Barbell height, how high you pull the bar. Time to fixation, how fast you get under the bar, okay? And the final component is the trajectory of the barbell. Do you put the bar in the right place? Do you put your body in the right place during the lift? So really what you guys can think of conceptually with barbell trajectory is a couple different levels. One is, am I making the lift? Does the bar get over my head in the snatch, onto my shoulders in the clean, directly over my head in the jerk? The second level is, am I running forward or backward in order to fix the bar, in order to actually save the lift? So do I have to move forward and backwards from my center of balance, right? Do I have to get under the bar, get behind it? And then third, am I actually able to fix the bar with really good speed under the weight and actually catch it at the bottom position, okay? Do I have to catch it really, really high, sort of back, and then finally adjust to get under it? What we're gonna talk about now is what factors influence that, okay? Outside of just doing snatches, just doing cleans, and just doing jerks, there's a sort of a system of exercises we can use that will impact the trajectory of the bar, okay? So where most of you guys are at, first you got to solidify your technique. You got to practice the lifts. You know, just because you run forward or run back a little bit when you're snatching and you know, it's month number two of lifting, doesn't mean that your barbell trajectory is bad yet. It just means you're still kind of new and learning. So understand that the drills and the things we're going over today may not be the first thing you jump to outside of, okay, I got to spend a little more time being cautious and working on my technique, right? So Jeremy's going to demonstrate. So some of the things we want to do to perfect the technique of the bar, some drills and things that are really good. If we're losing balance, okay, outside of the area of our foot, if we have to run forward or step backward to save the bar, the first thing we want to do to fix that is prevent ourselves from moving our feet during the lift, right? So an exercise we would do, get set. Imagine his feet are stuck to the ground, right? We're going to do something we call like a no feet snatch or a no feet clean. Just do a couple of reps, right? Where he would snatch without moving his feet. In doing this, in keeping our feet on the ground and keeping ourselves consistent here, we prevent ourselves from losing balance. I mean, obviously, you could still lose balance and step forward, but this condition in the lift, preventing ourselves from moving our feet, will kind of force us to pull the bar straighter and prevent ourselves from kicking the bar forward or swinging it, okay? The next step would be any kind of time you're lifting, especially like in the snatch, where we make contact with the bar and we deflect the bar in the wrong direction, okay? So in order to develop better skills around that, we want to do things where we don't make contact. So if you have a situation where you're hitting the bar with your hips and it's just way off time and you're consistent with that, so you make contact and every time it's powerful, but every time you hit it, the bar goes forward, right? Then we want to do some drills to work on all the other aspects of that, which would be snatches without contact in the hip. So he's going to set up. Bar would pass his hips. This exercise allows us to really emphasize the use of the upper body, okay? When you continue to pull past the hip with the bar, your shoulders and upper body do contribute significant force to the bar, to the vertical projection of the bar. So if you're hitting your hips and the bar goes forward, what did we learn earlier, right? The bar's out here. There's no way we're doing anything with our upper body. So drills like no contact snatch, where you pass the hip and pull entirely with the upper body at the top, are excellent ways to develop better skills keeping the bar close when it does make contact. Okay? Do a couple. Good. And then the next couple things, a regression from the no contact and the no foot, would be no feet and no hook grip. How many of you guys don't snatch with a hook grip already? No one? Okay.
Yeah, so
one thing that a hook grip does, when we grab the bar like with a hook, it allows us to overcome any of the force of the hips connecting with the bar and preventing the bar from popping out of our hands. When you take the hook grip out, when you don't use a hook grip, you can still make contact, but your brain is going to sense this proprioceptive thing that makes it, that tells it, the bar is going to come out of my hands. Don't hit the bar too hard. Don't make too much contact. That's going to mute that and allow you to pull a lot straighter. So we have this other regression. No feet, so our feet can't move, and no hook grip, okay? So it looks very similar to the other ones, except his isn't going to hook, okay? These exercises, this category of exercises, trajectory exercises, what are they all doing? They're putting conditions on the lift, so we're still doing snatch, clean. They're putting conditions on it that force us to have to pull against the bar and generate force against the ground and move everything more vertically. You guys all know that like the trajectory of a snatch is not a straight line, right? Everyone understands that? We all know it looks like an S that's kind of flattened. So our goal is to take that S and flatten it a little bit more. Exaggerate the thing we're not doing well by emphasizing parts of it that, by emphasizing technique or conditions that prevent us from doing those things wrong, right? No moving the feet, no hook grip, no contact, okay? These are all great tools to use to sort of prevent or to develop straighter, cleaner, nicer bar pass, okay? That's all special exercises outside of just learning the technique, right? Any questions on those? Yes.
Where would you implement this into like maybe a weekly structure?
So from a weekly training standpoint, every training cycle, basically every training week in a weightlifting program, you're going to have the competitive exercise. You're going to have snatches and clean and jerks, okay? Whether you're 12 weeks out or you're 1 week out from a meet. It's too tactile a skill to not do it at least once a week. These exercises, and I find in the programs I write, it's best to include special exercises like this early in the week before you would do classic lifts. So if you're going to do snatch and clean and jerk, and in our programs, a lot of times that's a Friday, right? Maybe we have a series of singles, 8, 10, 12 singles in a row, practicing the skill. We want to do these exercises with lower intensities because, for one, they're harder, so there's no way you can use heavier weights. And two, it's going to be difficult for you. If it's difficult for you, you got to start light. So they're better suited before the technical exercise, the classic lifts, early in the week. Let's say Friday's our day for snatch and clean and jerk. Monday or Wednesday is a great day to include these exercises because it gives you a chance to, one, reinforce good technique and practice the skill that you're lacking. And it's done before you do the classical exercises, so you remember the cues and you remember what's happening, okay? You've practiced the corrections, then you can apply them. So best time is usually before that. Do you have a question?
here to learn.
Yeah. Make sense? Anyone questions about that?
So the whole exercise selection as it pertains to what you do earlier in the week. Yeah, Max mentioned these three things: bar height, time to fixation, speed, which is speed under the bar, and now bar trajectory. So those three things make up what we call the weightlifting technique triad, and it's the interrelationship of those three things that makes efficient technique. Identifying where you are lacking in that is sort of the trick of the whole deal, so you can choose the right exercises. Because bar trajectory might not necessarily be a problem for you. You might be putting the bar in a great place, but it's only going this high, and you need it to go this high. You know, you might be able to pull the bar really high, but are having to do, you can do powers more than your full lifts because you're slow under the bar. Identifying that and choosing those exercises to address the appropriate things early in the week, so you're working on the parts, and then later in the week you get to practice the sport and do the full lift.
Someone might write a book about it one day.
Conveniently so,
with convenient charts to actually see and pick all the exercises.
That's a great book.
Thank you. Number one fan, new number one fan, Jeremy.
I don't know.
You had a question.
Yeah, would you ever prescribe those movements as a way to warm up for the full movements?
This is a good question, and this needs to be prefaced with a discussion on when are you a beginner versus when are you an intermediate, okay? If you're a beginner lifter, what should be your number one priority in training?
Practice.
Smash. Learn the technique, right? So the first things you need to do are practiced mostly snatch and clean and jerk technique to develop consistent technique. What's the difference between a beginner? How do you know when someone goes from a beginner lifter to an intermediate lifter? This should really be a quiz question because we've said it so many times. Does anyone know? Can anyone think about that?
What's it, reps?
It's close, yeah.
I think I heard you say it's making the same mistake over.
Right. So basically the same thing. When a beginner, you're a beginner if every lift you do, or let's say you do 10 lifts, you might have 8 different mistakes in those 10 lifts. An intermediate lifter, you might do 10 lifts and you miss 5 of them and it's the same exact thing all 5 times, right? What you've done is you've solidified your technique and now your weaknesses, whether it's muscular strength or poor skill or coordination, that now exposes itself as the one limiting factor that creates the same mistake again and again. So, in terms of using different exercises like this to warm up for exercises, it can be beneficial if you're already at an intermediate level. If you're already missing the weight the same way every single time, right, then using a special exercise to warm up can reinforce what you're trying to reinforce, right? Let's say it's no contact snatch warming up before you do regular snatch. You'll reinforce a great pull, vertical trajectory, everything's close, looks really good. Then you move into the classic exercise, you can carry that over. If you're a beginner still, you might miss the no contact snatch 3 different ways. Then you might miss the classic snatch 4 different ways. And then you've created this situation where you've just created a lot of misses, right? And that's not gonna learn, that's not gonna reinforce a consistent motor pattern. So I would yeah.
Would you say that an exception to that is if the problem is bar height? Because some people might be thinking, well, I'm not pulling the bar high enough, so he said to do the special exercise first. So I'm gonna do really heavy snatch pull before I do snatches.
Very true. So with bar height, relative height of the bar is really very, very dependent on strength and power, okay? If you can't pull the bar high enough today, there's not a technical exercise you're gonna do generally that's gonna change that, okay? Most of the exercises used to develop that are gonna rely on either you need to develop more strength with less speed, so that would be like heavier deadlifts, heavier squats, more shifted towards the side of developing strength and power, or if you're already strong but you can't get the bar high enough, you need to develop more power with more speed associated. So one side of the coin is, let's say you can't pull the bar high enough and you're weak. Get stronger, right? In the back and the legs using deadlifts and squats. The other side is, I can't pull the bar high enough, but I'm, you know, super, super strong. My squat is really, really big. I got a, you know, 600-pound front squat, but I can only clean and jerk 150 kilos. You need to develop more bar height with power variations, power exercises that develop that also have a component of speed and strength. So the difference there would be like power snatches, power cleans, those kind of things where there's still a component of speed, but there's also more strength associated with it.
But trying to include that stuff beforehand, is there's coaches who have suggested this is like a potentiation exercise. I'm going to do a snatch high pull, you know, with 110% of my max, and then I'm going to go snatch, and it's going to feel really light. That might work if you're a beginner lifter. Like, you might have a good session like that, because lots of things can work when you're a beginner lifter. But what's more likely going to happen is it's going to disrupt your technique. Yeah. It's going to fatigue you in a way that you can't afford because you don't have enough energy to do the good technique then. So bar trajectory, time to fixation exercises, preceding the classic lifts, yeah, there can be a place for that. Strength is for after the technique lifts.
Yes, yes. And that should be the structure of every workout, right? You may see people that write programs that are like, oh, we do squats before lifting. I don't know if I've ever written a program for anyone like that, and I have a lot of lifters that are not super strong, okay? Simply because if you do a bunch of squats before you do a snatch workout, you're going to struggle with a snatch workout, right? It's going to be hard. You're going to be fatigued, and you know, it can deteriorate your technique. It's just not necessarily the case. So structure of the workout is always going to be highest skill things first, classical lifts, special exercises, strength exercises, and then general physical preparation stuff, okay? That's a great structure. That's basically the structure we always use. Anything to add to that?
So just to kind of summarize, exercises that you're going to want to use if you identify that you struggle with bar trajectory. We have a book that helps you identify that. We also have a lot of other videos about it called the bar trajectory and the weightlifting technique triad. No hook, no feet, no contact, combinations of no hook, no feet, and no contact.
And those are the skill things you're going to do to develop the skill, the technique, right? They're heavily rooted in skill and proprioception and changing what you're doing, right? Versus strength things, right? Where it's those things are not developing new strengths in different areas. Okay. Sound good?
So questions. Thank you to Jeremy.
Hooray, Jeremy.
Guys, your bathroom called? It's time to give it the cleaning it deserves. Get rid of all that junk that's lying around. Freshen it up with high-quality products from Dollar Shave Club. Members get everything they need for their morning routine delivered right to their door. Dollar Shave Club is more than just razors, and it's way better than going to the store and buying expensive razors. They have everything you need. Razors, shave butter, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best. Even though I have a beard, I can still use the high-quality razors from Dollar Shave Club, the Executive Razor, the best razor I've ever used to clean up my neck, clean up the cheeks, and their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter is fantastic. It goes on clear so you can see where you're shaving. And since Dollar Shave Club delivers everything to you, you don't have to set foot in a store, wandering the sales aisles, hunting for razors, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, none of it. Clean up your bathroom and your morning routine. Join Dollar Shave Club today, and for just $5 with free shipping, you'll get the 6-blade Executive Razor Plus trial sizes of shave butter, body cleanser, and one wipe Charlie's. Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/juglife. That's dollarshaveclub.com/juglife. Any questions about what's been covered tonight, what hasn't been covered tonight, really anything regarding weightlifting training, anything you got?
So for a beginner, I assume the warm-up kind of progression you showed us is kind of an ideal way to work your way to the full classic lift. Mm-hmm. And then if your order, you're saying like work on high technique and then classic and then so on and so forth, would it make sense for a beginner to like go all the way to that progression of like starting with the highest skill, then this and this and this, all the way to strength? Or should they break it up, like do strength on different days?
So there's many different ways to train. One thing I would recommend is that you sort of really assess yourself as an athlete. Are you really, really strong already and you're learning something like weightlifting? If that's the case, spending a lot of energy and time continuing to get stronger while you're learning the technique could influence your technique negatively, right? Where some of the hardest people to teach are really, really strong people because they resort back to that quality that's so easy for them. Be strong, overpower the bar. They miss that aspect. So, you know, take an audit of yourself. If you have really, really great strength and bad skill, you may just do your strength exercise at the end of the workout and do very, very little amount of them. Just enough to maintain, maybe not lose a lot of strength, so you can focus all your energy on the actual skill itself. The rate at which skill is going to fatigue you, skill work is going to fatigue you, is much smaller. The SRA curve of skill work is very, very small. So you can practice skill work regularly, every day probably, right, if you're snatching the bar. Strength work is much greater than that. If you're doing strength work in the middle of those skill sessions on the other days, you can disrupt the next day. If you get really, really sore from doing a 8 sets of 8 back squat on Tuesday, your Wednesday snatch clean jerk session is not going to go very well, right? So make that assessment. Are you really, really strong already? You don't need to do as much. If you're not super strong, if you're kind of on the weaker side, then those strength things can be incorporated into those days that you're practicing skill already, or the other day because it's just not that impactful on you, right? Does that answer your question?
There's a lot of different, I mean, right. Even considerations beyond that, just from like a special work capacity, the athlete's schedule. You know, we could make a very ideal program, you know, all scientifically written, and we've figured out if your, you know, bar trajectory, height, whatever needs to be worked on, and it's a 2.5 hour session, but you only have 1.5 hours, so then that program is shit for you.
Yeah.
You know? So that could also affect how you have to split the workouts up and what your weekly organization looks like.
Yeah. Prioritization, that's all it is, right?
There was another question back here before. Yeah.
You then. I was going to ask about hip contact with the bar and how important that is, like how heavy that should be. Like some lifters don't make a lot of contact and some make a lot.
So it's going to be dependent on the proportion of strength you have in different areas of your body, right? What Chad talked about earlier is that a lot of the European lifters have generally like shorter torsos, longer limbs. A lot of the Asian lifters, like Chinese, really short legs, really long torsos. Their pull, they're doing the same thing. The mechanics of their body, their limbs are moving in the same way. They're applying force the same time, the same way. Imagine it like European guys, if your body's more traditional like that, longer torso or shorter torso, longer limbs, you may have like a 70%, 30% distribution. 70% coming from your legs, 30% from your hips, right? Or maybe more, maybe like 60-40. If you have really short limbs and kind of more leg dominant, lower, stronger legs, weaker back, you may be like 70% or 90% legs, 10% in your hips, right? The thing to remember about the contact in the hips, it's not so important that it's a, like, I got to smash the bar and hear this rattle. It's that there's an abrupt, aggressive acceleration that does not slow the bar down, right? It's going to start, like I talked about the resolution, it's going to start day one through day 200 probably looking kind of rugged, right? And if you post it on different places on the internet, you might get yelled at. But day, you know, as the weeks and years progress, you go from a really abrupt kind of banging and jumping forward to like a really smooth contact, right? And then you watch the best in the world, and they make contact, but it's generally going to be a lot more of a subtle, smooth addition component to the lift, not this like, whoa, that guy just smashed off his hips, okay? I will say this caveat is that the way you train will influence that. If you train the lifts, snatch and clean and jerk, super, super heavy all the time, you're going to always be tired, and you're always going to be, that constant fatigue is going to force you to rely on the one thing you know you can get to move the lift, to move the bar. That's going to be your hips. So if you do snatch and clean and jerk fucking heavy every single day, max out, you know, Bulgarian system, I'm going to just, you know, I can do this, you're going to start to degrade your technique because you're going to be fatigued everywhere else. And the only thing you're able to do is use your hips. So you see a lot of times people that are much more dominant in the, you know, power coming from entirely from their hips, probably train the lifts super heavy all the time. So they don't have a chance to really develop good technique because they're so fatigued, they're just doing whatever they can to make the lift. Does that make sense? So you look at lifters that you have a more well-rounded program, it's a component. It's part of, but not the most obvious portion of their lift. Other questions? Anyone else have questions?
To add to that, actually, one of the things that I've learned from Max and from his book and from lifting with people that are a lot better than me is the biggest difference in the contact from like a beginner to like some of the people that were lifting earlier today is the contact is upward, and the body and the bar go up together instead of the outward contact. Right? People talk about hip extension, and extension in itself is a forward-backward movement. It has to be with the legs at the same time. That's what they learn to do is create that upward trajectory on the bar.
Jeremy has been doing our online coaching since the first day that
he was first guy to sign up.
Yeah, literally the first person to sign up. That's why he's obviously so smart, good,
handsome.
Handsome, yeah.
Should have seen me before I signed up.
He was a troll.
So my question actually was, in terms of barbell trajectory and
aside from the drills that you showed, would you ever apply like a tactile or a visual cue? Like I've seen coaches stand in front of their lifters and say, you know, don't touch me with the bar. I saw a Korean lifter who had a like PVC pipe structure that they would lift sort of inside of with an empty bar to make sure it didn't go forward or back. Would you ever employ that, or do you think these drills would be?
I don't trust my lifters enough. And the way I talk to them, there's no way they would take advantage of that instantly. The one thing I don't like about an object in front of you is that it just adds another level of lower degree of safety, right? There's something in front of you, you can hit it. You're also thinking about the external things there. What I like is a box on the ground. So I take people that are really struggling. The first thing you do, right? Let's put a box around your feet. Maybe there's an inch or so space between front and back. Every time you do a snatch, I want you to look down at the box after you're done and see if your feet jumped forward or back or whatever they're doing. Then in your mind, you conceptualize, okay, don't jump over that line. That may be all you ever need to fix the trajectory, right? You don't need to do anything special after that because right away, don't jump forward. I just got to stay in this box. And your body, your brain takes over, and it's almost like an unconscious thing where you just pull straighter. Make sense? So I'm not a big fan of putting things in front, standing in front, doing things like that. Just draw a box, right? It's much more significant of a stimulus, I think, as a cue than you think, right? Than it sounds, at least.
I found that my background was track and field through the shot put for 15 years. And there were some coaches who would put like a hurdle at the front of the ring. So you wouldn't kind of lunge into the finish of the throw, but you would go up. And I found whenever I tried to do something like that for my own training or when I was coaching, the hurdle was so in the athlete's mind, it changed things well before the finish of the throw. They were compensating at different points of it. So it ended up being more disruptive to the technique than helpful.
There's a lot of broken hurdles up at Cal. Smashed.
Let's go here, then there.
So you were talking earlier about the no contact is mm-hmm. good for the upper body component. How do you compare that to a muscle snatch in that regard?
So main difference, no contact snatch, you're generally going to use much larger loads. So everyone knows what a muscle snatch is, right?
And a muscle snatch should also be with no contact.
Right. Every time we teach a muscle snatch, it's without contact, without a hook grip, okay? So the same things are being trained. The difference in that a muscle snatch is going to be much, much lighter and much more of a preparatory exercise as a beginning in the training session kind of thing. Or if you're going to do a technique session, it just limits the load so much that you can use basically near maximum weights in your muscle snatch and not fatigue yourself, right? The no contact snatch, many people can snatch near 100% weights with no contact if they're very good technicians. Some people are going to be a disproportionate amount of that, right? So it's much more suited to solidifying and developing technique at higher intensities than like a muscle snatch.
Something to consider too, and we'll get your question next. As Max is talking about these different variations, and they generate different levels of fatigue. I'm not a weightlifting coach. Max is the weightlifting coach. But if you've seen any of the stuff that I do with powerlifting programming, do a lot of this undulating periodization, lower intensity days, medium intensity days, high intensity days. We have a lifter named Anthony Pomponio, very strong 85 kilo class guy, and he would generate fatigue very quickly. You know, he's done 156, 188, something like that. Strong guy, it's going to be fatiguing to him. But when he would generate a lot of fatigue, and we would try and give him a light day following that,
yeah,
that was just low percentages in the snatch and clean and jerk, he had a very hard time kind of staying engaged mentally with that. And you might have lifters who have this same issue. So what we did, instead of saying, all right, you know, snatches at 70%, where it was just kind of so boring to him and he didn't have to focus that well on what he was doing, we would give him on the low day exercises that he could try 100% effort on, but that they limited how much weight he could lift. So, you know, a muscle snatch or no hook, no feet, or snatch from very high blocks, you can't go really heavy on those, but he could still make PRs. And that's, you know, what he and so many other athletes are going to be motivated by, is that they can make PRs. So we would choose the exercises that were self-limiting, the most self-limiting for the light days, and then medium days, a little bit less self-limiting, like powers or hang variations. So still not as fatiguing, and not able to use as much weight generally as lifts from the floor. And then the high intensity days were the full lifts from the floor. So that could be something for you to consider with athletes if they struggle with focus and motivation on lighter, you know, planned lighter days, as well as needing lighter days. Because even, you know, you could make a muscle snatch PR, and yeah, that was 100%. The relative intensity was 100%, but the absolute intensity of a, you know, maybe Pomp had done 102 in the muscle snatch, compared to 155 in the regular snatch. 102 is never going to generate near as much fatigue as 155. So that's something to keep in mind.
Hiring? Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Questionnaire.
Jumping backwards in the snatch, mm-hmm. Is it an issue? Is it detrimental? Are there exercises to correct it? Is it worth correcting? Well, what are your thoughts?
So the first way to look at it is, if you're moving backwards with the barbell, right, then if we stretched out that, you ever seen a bar path trajectory? We trace the bar, it's moving a further distance. So right away, you're doing more work than someone who's not jumping back. One of the main causes, and that's a great example of barbell trajectory being not necessarily wrong, but less than ideal. If you're moving, you and an object that's body weight or more back a foot, you could be a little more efficient. One of the main reasons for it is generally that you're either generating all your power from your hips and swinging the bar around, but you're athletic enough to move in preparation to catch it, so you hop backward, or it could be the kind of situation where everything is falling backward. So the entire mass of you and the bar is now falling back during the pull. So instead of being vertical, the whole trajectory is now tilted this way, and you're going to fall backward, right? Not necessarily wrong or, you know, like, oh, that's bad technique, but it could be more efficient if it was more vertical. If you're using the same amount of force you are to move that bar that distance, but that's put into the bar going up and down more, you probably could lift a little more weight. Make sense? So I would say if you're jumping back, you know, a couple inches here and there, that's not a big deal. Excessively, I would work to straighten that out.
Is foot pressure a big reason why that
would
be happening?
Another big one, people get into the idea, it's really difficult. People really wanna, you know, when you do like a preacher curl, right? All the pressure's on your bicep. It's easy to be like, I'm just gonna focus on this thing and I know, and it's just straightforward.
This is from a man with a lot of preacher curl experience.
Right. People want
one rep max preacher curl, 5 times a day.
Yep, that's with 72 kilos. people want to have an absolute. Oh, put all your weight on your heel. Shove your knees out. Right. Sit back. It's really easy to be like, oh, that's the right way. Just all the way. It feels good, because now I'm on my heels for sure. But the problem is, that's not really how your body works. So if, like he's saying, your weight is way back on your heel and you're excessively trying to do that because that's like what you've been told, or like, oh, someone's like, hey, stay on your heel at the top of the pull, and we'll just get there in the beginning and I figured it out. It just creates problems for you, right? So bar, you know, foot pressure is super important. It's got to be correct. It's got to be ideal, not maximum one way or the other, okay? And yes, if your weight's way back on your heel, it's really easy to just generate all your force from your hips and swing the bar and hop backward.
And it will make it, particularly off the floor, which I think I said earlier, it will make it really hard to be able to push with your legs, push with your quads, which is why you've been doing so many squats, hopefully, for weightlifting. Other questions? There's a lot of questions. All right, let's go just from left to right.
When programming double days, would you prioritize like more strength and leaking in the day, later in the afternoon, or would it vary like lifter to lifter, how you would structure that?
Basically, the way I would structure double days for the people I work with, it's almost entirely they do the lifting first and then the strength work at the end of the day, simply because they're going to be fatigued from strength work if you do it first. From a standpoint of people's schedules, that generally, you know, some people just feel better in the afternoon. If that's the case and they really want the session to be in the afternoon, then they would do some of the strength exercises in the morning and then some in the afternoon. If you're doing double days, you should already be training 6 days a week, right? Or 5 or 6 days a week. So if you're doing double days, but you're training 3 days a week, I would spread it out across the week first. And if that's the case, then you might do a double day on Monday and Friday, and both of those sessions would be highly technical, and then your strength exercises would be like Tuesday and Thursday, because you're gonna be a lot of fatigue from the first double day, Monday. Then your speed, everything, is not gonna be an ideal situation to train technique again the next day, but force output's not gonna be affected. So you can do your strength exercises the second day. Right? You can distribute the load across the whole week. That also suits well to when you get closer to competition. You can consolidate those stressors and move the strength exercises to the heaviest intense days of snatch and clean and jerk. And then you have more rest days between those difficult sessions. Right? Yeah. That makes sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Like our lifters today did a double this morning, was just very technical, like a priming kind of session for max out in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Why coach the muscle snatch always with no contact?
So not always. Sometimes you have people use contact. Just in general, because what I want to do is develop more upper body strength. That's why we're going to use the muscle snatch. You can do a muscle snatch with contact, and it does a decent job sometimes of reinforcing how to extend your legs and make contact at the same time. But in general, we don't do a ton of muscle snatches, like except in Pomp's case, where he's probably doing it on another day so he can push himself hard, right? Next one?
Yeah.
Oh, just making sure. So if you guys are having athletes that have like a lot of excessive rotation or a lot
like
of
twisting?
Like leaning, either twisting or like leaning, I'm assuming you would probably use more like bodybuilding strength type exercises versus like a variation to fix that?
So the first thing would be identifying why it's happening. We have a whole video about this called Fixing Hip Shift in the Squat.
He's understating the video. That video, you should all have memorized the video, because it's, as a coach, as a trainer, it's an invaluable piece of video. I don't know what you call it. It's just excellent for you to know. And then as an athlete, you should be doing some of that.
So where it's most likely coming from is some sort of pelvic rotation. So to be able to correct that pelvic rotation, some unilateral type of exercises can help with that. Maybe a front foot elevated split squat with a very controlled tempo, like a 5 second eccentric. But what Quinn will show in the video are some 90-90 breathing drills where you have a foam roller between your knees and you're rotating it and using your adductors to kind of regain control and reset that pelvic position. And then he also uses, I believe what he refers to as a neuromuscular, it's like neuromuscular training, in which we're doing a squat, and let's say I was having a problem shifting more onto my right leg. I would do a squat with a light weight, and he would pull me in that direction with a band into the same direction that I would shift. because then it would cue my body to force back against it, and then when the band was removed, I would feel like I was way over to my left side with it, but I actually ended up right down the middle. Also, if it's an adductor problem, doing some squats, like band around the knees kind of squats can be useful too. But yeah, certainly, you know, general exercises like split squat, step ups can be helpful there.
You don't let go of the band during the squat, just so you know.
Would you progress those in speed too?
Not necessarily, because you're going to be able to feel your weight distribution so much better. And it's not an exercise that we're really using for like strength so much. You know, we're going to do bilateral squatting for that. It's really just more for the corrective qualities.
So I've heard a lot about the amazing book. What is the name of the book? And where can we get it at your shop, on Amazon? And then the second follow-up to that is, like all good information, how would you recommend digesting the information as you go to use it as a tool to your training? How would you recommend people use it? Would they use it in conjunction with the trainer? Or how would you recommend they digest all that information?
So, first, you can get the book at store.jtsstrength.com.
It's called The Weightlifting Technique Triad. I also have like maybe 10 hard copies with me.
And what I would recommend is read the book, find out what parts of the book you assimilate that make sense. Then maybe read it again a few times and see if what you really pick up, what really is kind of elusive or missing. It should be, I feel like there's enough practical charts and information to really say, okay, I kind of get what's going on. Here's a general guideline and direction I need to go with what I'm doing right and wrong. And then go from there. Obviously, you can get on the greatest training program there is on the internet and have access to Jeremy Martin. But you can do something like that. You know, as a trainer, it's a great tool, I think, because it gives you a sense of, like, if you have a group of people, maybe 7 or 8 people in a class, and you can quickly look at them all and say, those three need to do something for time to fixation, those people need to do something for trajectory, break them into groups, they both do 2 different exercises, right? You'll be able to assess groups faster and kind of put them in better positions to succeed. A lot of learning anything is just reading it again and again until it makes sense. Feel free to post questions or ask me questions, and you know, hopefully you can answer things.
And we have full videos about each of the parts.
Yeah.
So one video that's an overview of the whole thing called Weightlifting Technique Triad, another podcast that's just about that whole thing, plus a time to fixation video, a bar height video, and a bar trajectory video.
There's a lot of videos.
Yeah.
A lot of great free information.
Yeah, pretty much any questions there are, we got a video for it at this point. The last thing I'd say about that is to probably just try and focus on one part. Take one thing, choose an exercise that we talk about to address it. Do that exercise, you know, 3-4 weeks of it, and then see how things have improved in the full lift, rather than trying to work on all three of them at once or changing the exercise too frequently, because you have to have enough time to develop some skill in the exercise and for it to cause some directed adaptation towards the goal that you're working towards.
If you need to work on all three, you just need to do more snatches.
Yeah. All right, well, that was the Jug Life podcast. If you like it, we always appreciate 5-star review on iTunes. Write us something funny or nice on that. If you're interested in online coaching, we offer that for weightlifting with Max, which, Jeremy, how good is it?
Pretty good.
It's like maple syrup in the summertime.
He may have done another well-known online coaching program previously, and how many more PRs do you make now? And how long had it been since you'd made a PR before that?
6 or 7 months.
There we go. It may have. So we offer weightlifting, powerlifting, super total, which is the unholy combination of powerlifting and weightlifting, strongman, and power building through juggernautcoaching.com. Subscribe to YouTube. 3 videos a week every Tuesday,
Thursday and Saturday, created by this man right here, Shorty Sedang, the world's strongest videographer, 500-pound deadlift at about 125 pounds body weight. And that's about it. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, on Facebook. You can email me max@jtsstrength.com. For you guys, you can find me back there sometimes.
I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Train on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. Thank you to the beautiful people of Oakland, California. This was the Jug Life Podcast, and we'll see you next week.